What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my wonderful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
And yeah, it's mid-January 2024. This is episode 28 for us.
It's cold. Very cold today.
Yeah, it's cold. If you're new to the podcast, welcome, welcome. We're going to talk about kind of all things beekeeping. We typically put out an episode, I'd say, about once a month. And we talk about what's going on in our hives. We are the owners of Kara Jo Skincare and Bee Farm. So we have an organic skincare company.
That we take our apiary products and use them in skincare and herbalist.
Yeah, I also work in the beer industry. So we're going to crack a beer and have some fun while we talk about it. If you're here for just a lecture on bees and you want us just to talk about bees and bees only and basically read a thesis paper to you, this ain't the right podcast. We're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to go off on some tangents. Hopefully you're into it and you can deal with that. If not, you know, there's plenty of beekeeping podcasts out there that are that. So right. Go find them.
Yeah, do your thing.
But yeah,
welcome here.
Yeah, it's mid-January. It's cold. So yeah, I mean, we're going to talk off-season beekeeping a little bit. Ooh, what are you pouring there, baby?
This is a garden beer.
Oh, another Plan B beer.
Yeah, Plan B. Oops.
Cheers.
Myself way more than I poured you.
So Plan B, Poughkeepsie, New York. These lovely people, Emily and Evan Watson, makes this really rad beer. They actually capture yeast from their beehives and use that yeast in all of their beer throughout the year. So, so, so cool.
Yeah, if you're ever up there, you got to go. We love them.
Yeah, they rule. So yeah, all right, it's the off season and we're making some moves.
We are. You're leading the way in making moves.
Yeah. So just to catch everybody up real quick, we had a farm that we grew for years and built, and it got ruined in Hurricane Ida in September 1st, 2021. I mean, literally took out everything that property is condemned. It's hard to even get on the property, but fortunately, Kara was smart enough that she made us move the hives. At the time, we had about 15 hives at that spot. And at literally between like 10 and midnight, give or take at night, we packed up all the hives. And they were
We packed them up.
And this was September 1st. There was like, we use all medium boxes. There was some that had 6 boxes on them.
I mean, it was brutal.
The fullest of full.
I think I was crying like the whole time we did it. I was like, I hate this. I don't want to do it anymore.
It was starting to like rain real bad. And you know, you can't close bees up. And it was hot and raining and there's bees. It was bad. But we quote unquote, we saved the bees. And then we moved to a property not far from there. Had an insane psychopath crystal land. What do we call
Crystal her? Karen.
The Crystal Karen landlord, and we fled for our lives. She threatened to kill all of our bees.
All of these stories are in past episodes.
Yeah.
Spark your interest.
So we purchased a property. We have 6-7 acres here in Schwenksville, Pennsylvania. And what is it, 6 acres? You gave me a weird
you
look.
Always exaggerate. So when you were like 7, I'm like, here he goes.
I always forget if it's like 5.9 or 6.9.
It's 6, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Kara's giving me dirty looks already.
You could ignore them.
Impossible. You're shooting daggers. But we took over a property that was just in complete forest. And we've been building it out.
And like by forest, it's like multi-flora rows. It's not like a healthy forest.
It will be.
Yeah. We're working hard to get it there. But it was basically impenetrable. So we had all this land, but you couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah. So we got goats. We rescued some goats. They are amazing. If you want to check out our goat content, Instagram, Kara Jo Bee Farm.
In the off season, that's basically all it is bee content.
You're not seeing a lot of goat content.
Goat content.
Yeah. We're not in the hives right now. So you're getting the good goat stuff. But they're so awesome. But yeah, we're building out and we're currently building an apiary in the middle of the forest.
Yeah.
So we're calling it our forest apiary. I'm really excited.
Yeah. So the goats have been clearing out the multiflora rows. Basically, it was just that. Like, it's like trees and stuff, but and spice bush. But the multiflora rows was what we needed to get rid of. So they are clearing that out and creating space. And then Greg's been going in and b- bushwhacking with his machete. And
yeah, there's a lot of we live in an area where the emerald ash borer has decimated the ash tree population.
Are ash trees alive anywhere in the United States?
I know the borer started in like Chicago area and moved east. At this point, I'd be surprised if anywhere in the country had a healthy population. And if they do, a matter of years, they won't. It's very sad. But the good thing is it's great wood to burn. We heat our house with our wood stove. But yeah, man, I have been just today. I probably chopped like 300 feet worth of tree.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch.
You were like 300 yards away and you felt one of them.
Oh, yeah. The goats were, it's nuts. So I was doing yard work and
Kara's. So we have a ATV path going out to this apiary, and Kara has been at shout out Chip Drop.
Yeah. I was going to say we should. Yeah. Is that a national thing?
It's more than Pennsylvania area, no doubt about it. I don't know if it's everywhere, but Chip Drop is a website. It might be an app too, but a website. You sign up and local arborists sign up, and when they have wood chips, they need to get rid of them. They oftentimes are paying somebody to take those wood chips, but you set up here's my location. You take a little picture of where you want it, give little detailed instructions, and for free, they'll drop off wood chips. And you can specify, like, I'm willing to accept logs. I don't recommend anybody do that because the logs they give you are all like what I call crotches. It's all like the wood. Weird. It's all the wood that was like hard to split. I feel like they take the good wood that can be turned into firewood.
Yeah. And sometimes you get logs anyway, and it's just like these, it's not pieces that you want.
But you can say no logs. You can say like a little logs, whatever. Or you can say like just chips only. I always do the one in the middle. I'm like, if there's a couple, we got fire pits, no big deal. And
sometimes it takes a long time for them to come and drop it off, and sometimes it takes a couple days.
It depends. If you're in an area where there's a lot of tree action going on, you'll get it quickly. And literally, it took us one day.
Well, in the Northeast right now, there's been so many storms and crazy winds, so there's these downed trees. So this is probably just like the perfect time. But we've used this a couple times. And listen, you're getting a lot of chips, so don't.
Oh yeah, they're dropping off a truckload. I mean, it's probably like 3 yards worth.
Our friend first got it, worth, and they cubic were yards. Like, "What are we supposed to do with all this?" So, you know, if you're gonna do it, know you're gonna get a lot. But I've been mulching the ATV path, but the goats. So I was like hanging out right next to the goats, and Greg was out in the woods. And anytime even there was like a little crack of tree, the goats would run away from the sound. And it was really interesting.
Man, this garden beer is tasting
so good, right?
Good.
But they were like instinctually knowing that there was danger.
I've had to drop trees in their goat area, their fenced-in goat area. And literally they know, like as soon as you're messing with trees, they run to the opposite side. I ended up putting a bunch of treats and I cut a bunch of bamboo that they love to eat, so I would make sure they stayed over there. But like they instinctually understand falling trees bad.
Yeah.
Go away from it.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
So there's a space in the woods that is filled with dead trees.
Yeah.
And both already fallen over and ones that we need to cut down.
And like in the past week, we've had two really, really bad storms. And each time a bunch of trees have fallen in that area. Falling.
We had earlier, if you were listening before, we had talked about a tree fell down on our bees. Like we had to rush to build this apiary and it was not ideal. And Greg had cut down some trees, but we couldn't cut down all of the dead trees in the timeline that we were given. And a tree fell and knocked out like 4 hives, and 2 of them so far didn't make it.
Yeah. And it was the 2 that got like really, really decimated where we put them back together. I said, it's like we did triage, like, you know, war scene. But unfortunately I just was in the hives. I can't really say I was in the hives. I was giving them a little bit of fondant. So what we do in the wintertime is, you know, we leave them 3 full boxes of their own honey. If they don't have enough honey coming in the fall, we'll give them some sugar syrup to what I call top them off and just make sure that they have the stores that they need. But on top of that, I'll do a patty of fondant, literally baker's fondant. So what I was doing is I was just putting fondant on the top of each of the hives. And I went into the one that got hit real hard. No activity, you know, and I think what happens, queen died, you know, and
I mean, it would have been a miracle if it was carnage. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it was like really bad.
If it was, and it was kind of later in the season, like that was in the fall. And if it was earlier in the season, then I would have been able to go, okay, let's see if there's eggs. If you didn't find eggs, then I would have merged all those bees with a laying queen and we would have been good. But it was so late in the season that a lot of the hives had stopped laying already. So I went, all right, let's see what happens here. And no, it was not good. But you know, I mean, icing or lemonade out of lemons, there's actually a lot of honey in that hive. I would never extract that honey because we did put sugar syrup on that hive to make sure that they were full. So that's what I would call sunny sugar honey. But that's great too when we make splits. We've got built out frames. We've got food in early spring. Sometimes we, especially in the Northeast here in Southeast Pennsylvania, but we'll deal with springtime weather, really warm, really cold, really warm, super cold and rainy for a week or two. So having some capped frames of honey or sunny is really beneficial in the springtime to be able to put them into hives and make sure they're good. So, you know, like I said, lemonade out of lemons, we've got 4 or 5 full boxes out of that hive. And
yeah, but is it even in the condition where,
well, I when I did triage, I had to, you know, so swap gnarly out a good 20 frames, give or take.
But
yeah, so I went in and I did that to all the hives here we have 2 different apiaries, or well, 3 different apiaries, but I put fondant in all of those just to make sure they have winter feed. And it's good, I said it before, but it's nice that they have some emergency feed, but it's also nice that you can just open up the top, peek in and see if they've eaten that fondant. If they have, then you know, okay, they need food.
Right, it's a good barometer check.
Yeah, but if you peek in and they haven't even touched it, you're like, "Oh, they're good. They're going to eat their own food first."
And we have a shim with a screen like on it, so, and then foam insulation on top of that. So you can just you open the hive, lift the foam, but underneath the screen, you're not letting any bees out. So you can check that situation and be like minimally invasive.
Yeah, it's a really nice setup. If you look at our YouTube, you can see that shim. If Mind Your Hives Beekeeping on YouTube, I think you can see the shim setup. Or if you check out Mind Your Hives or Carejo Bee Farm, look back on some pictures, we definitely show it. But I have a feeling we'll post some pictures or a little video of how we made those shims soon. What else were we doing in the off season? So we freeze all of our frames.
We got a deep freezer.
Yeah. We have like, you know, one of those chest freezers in the garage. And it'll fit like 4 boxes at a time. So I freeze everything for at least 2 full days, usually 3, 4 or more.
Not going in there that often.
And I freeze them for a few days just to make sure I'm killing any small hive beetle larvae, wax moth, not really a thing right now, but who knows, just in case, to freeze that. And then we'll store those boxes with frames and we'll either spray them. So there's a wax moth larvicide, still good for organic beekeeping. It's a B402. It's, you know, one of the classic BTs. So it's a bacillus bacteria that targets specifically only wax moth larvae. We'll spray that on all the frames and store them, and then we really don't have to worry about it. Or if we don't get around to spraying them all, we have wax moth crystals. So easy to Google it, but...
But there's certain crystals you need, right?
It's the one that starts with a P. So I think it's paradichlorobenzene, paradichlorobenzene. I think that's it.
It's what you want or you don't want.
It's what you do want.
You do want.
Okay. Yeah. But if you look up wax moth crystals, you should easily find it. But yeah, it's the one with the P, as in paradichlorobenzene. take an inventory. You know, you fall comes, you hope you can extract your fall honey, or you're letting the bees take supers and put it into their brood chamber. But you're left with a lot of extra boxes. You're left with a lot of extra frames. Take that inventory now, because come spring, as soon as those bees come out of spring or come out of winter into spring and they're booming, they want to multiply. They're going to want to split. And you don't want to swarm. So make sure you're ready. You've got
Everything built, everything bought. The last thing you want to do is scramble at the end and you don't have stuff. And what are you going to do? And then you have to make decisions based upon the lack of equipment that you have.
Which is terrible.
It's the worst position.
It's so stressful.
You're like, oh, I could do this, but I can't do this. Yeah, you don't want to get caught in that situation.
Yeah, I remember at one point being like, oh, we don't have any more boxes. All right, I'll just cut out these swarm cells, buy a little bit of time. Nope.
Yep.
Gone. So I was saying, if you've got five hives and they're healthy and you feel confident they're going to overwinter, you better be prepared to split those. So what are you going to do? Are you going to sell bees? If you're going to sell bees, I hope last season you got inspected. You know, Pennsylvania, in order to sell bees, you need to be inspected by the state inspector. There's a past episode we talked about that. Our state inspector, Jeff Eckel, rules. Love the dude. He's so great. When he comes out, Kara
I think I've taken off work because I was like, Jeff's coming. I need to take a half day.
Yeah, you learn so much going in the hives with him. And, you know, he's given us just praise for how great the hives have looked every time. Makes us feel real good. But we learn so much. Like, he just sees things on a deeper level and then allows us to know what we should be looking for. If you want to sell bees, hopefully you got inspected. If you're going to sell bees, you know, get the equipment. You're going to need cardboard nuke boxes. You're going to need the things to put them in, you know, maybe even the mesh bags, like have this everything ready now.
That's also good. Just a good tip. If you want to catch swarms or stuff, have temporary nukes, have the bags too.
We just keep them in the car. Like I have like a little, it's like a emergency setup for swarm catching that stays in the car.
Yeah. We have too much stuff in our cars.
Yeah. I think every beekeeper does.
Probably. But like even just having that, like, you know, if you make a split and you got to move the bees to a friend's house 5 miles away, have that equipment to be able to do that easily. So like thinking about all of that kind of stuff is helpful.
Yeah. Highly recommend having a friend nearby that is comfortable with you putting a box of bees on their property for just a few days.
And some people like totally dig that.
We never had anybody that said no. Okay. You know, everybody's always been into it, but you know, you just got to explain to them, hey, this is what we're doing. We need to bring a box of bees over. It redoes their GPS and then we can move them back into our apiary. So for, you know, 2 days, you're going to have some bees. But so much easier when you make a split, take that split, move it to somewhere else for 2 days, let them, you know, their GPS reset itself, and then you can move them back and you can literally put them right next to the hive they used to be in and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's
so, you know,
great.
Get to planning. We buy our boxes, so we buy them unassembled.
Because it's cheaper that way.
Yeah, when we first started in 8-9 years, whatever it was, 10 years ago, I built the boxes. The lumber was cheap enough that I could just buy lumber, and it worked for mediums. Buying the lumber for deeps was more expensive, but mediums worked. And I could make the boxes for cheaper than I could buy them. Now, it's actually cheaper to buy them unassembled in bulk. But I still make the lids, so I'd make migratory lids. I still make the bottom boards. So easy. But again, you got to plan for it, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to get caught behind.
Yeah, I had like a bunch of wood delivered ahead of time just so I have it here, knowing that I need to make 30 more.
Yeah, we got some assembly lines going on. And then you have to figure out where you're going to store it all.
Preparing to fail. Wait,
no.
Failing to prepare.
Is preparing to fail.
Preparing to fail. I have that tattooed on my ribs.
Oh.
No, I don't. I was thinking about how we're building this apiary, and it's still on the same property that we've had an apiary. So I don't think things are going to be crazy different, but like, I'm so curious to see. You know, this apiary is going to be in the woods. It's in the, you know, it's our forest apiary. Yes, I'm clearing all these trees so it can get good light, but it's going to be more shaded than our other apiaries. So what are we going to see that's different?
Hopefully not hive beetles.
And I'm sure we will see some more hive beetles, but I'm prepared. I know what I want to do to counter that if we have an issue. I'm going to put some pollen patties up top. I'm going to let the hive beetles go, ooh, pollen patties is amazing. I'm going to take them out, freeze them, boom. that's, yeah, you have that's to stay
on
be how,
top of that big time.
Though. And then I just, yeah, I'm, I don't actually feed pollen patties ever. So I'm going to use that method to
bait
and kill small hive beetles if needed. Hopefully not. I tend to say if a hive is booming, if it's healthy, they deal with small hive beetles themselves.
I mean, we talked about this in a prior episode also, but there is at our one, we volunteer beekeep for, a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And,
shout out College Settlement Camp.
And the hive beetles were just like atrocious this year.
Yeah.
And we use Swiffer pads, and I know people are like, I hear it all the time. You kill more bees than you do hive beetles with Swiffer pads.
Wrong.
Do you kill some bees? Yeah. But
it, pretty minimal.
It
and I think some of those might just be bees that are dying anyway, and they're just kind of like, that's where they died.
They do get caught up, but like not that many. And it was so effective.
Single digits.
Yeah. So most. Effective. Like hundreds of hive beetles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once the bees chew up the Swiffer pads and make them, you know, all fibrous, yo.
They're getting trapped.
It worked.
Yeah. So that's always good.
But I was thinking about, so we started a new apiary last year, and man, there's different trees and flora around it, and they had a huge bump of black locust, a ton of black locusts around that apiary, and yo, the amount of resources those bees brought in blew our minds compared to where our other apiary was. Like night and day. I remember being like, oh, they're fine. And then like a couple weeks went back
God.
And you were like, Greg, they built out the two boxes
I was,
already.
Like, I thought I was going to be there for like, I don't know, half an hour. I was there for like 4 hours, yeah. Like dying.
You found a bunch of swarm cells because they didn't have room that we were. And it was just like, oh my God. So like, no, if you're starting a new spot, it's going to be different.
Yeah. And you got to check in on them because we were dealing with so much stuff. And then it took a minute to get that apiary back on track, and now it went into winter like really great, so hopefully it comes out great too.
Yeah. And like, you know, what equipment do you need? Buy your equipment over the winter. There's sales, things are cheaper. Come springtime, any of these bee companies, they know you need, so you're not getting hooked up with specials come spring, but if you shop around, you can get some good specials now. Even something as little as like sugar. Like if you keep your eye out, you can get sugar at a discounted rate if you are somebody that feeds in the spring. We don't tend to feed at all in the spring, but a lot of people do. If you need frames built, you know, you kind of have to be feeding, especially early spring for that. But like, you know, little things like that, you gotta just write it all down. Just go like, all right, what did I use this year? Boom, 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 boom. And then you go, what do I need next year? And you have it. And then, you know, every year you do that, you're just going to be a little more prepared. We've definitely not been prepared, and
yeah,
it's
so
kicked us
times.
In the ass. So I'm like excited to be prepared.
Yeah. I like wake up in the middle of the night. I'm like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I think I just jinxed myself. I'm like, and we're going to be screwed.
You
else?
Just try your best. You try your best and you learn, and then you do it differently another time.
If you need to buy bees, line up now. Like we just started taking pre-orders. We're going to sell some nukes next year.
This year.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's 2024. We're going to sell some nukes this year. We hadn't ever sold bees in the past. I mean, a couple times, like friends or somebody got like in a bad situation. We wanted to help them out. We did. We've always been inspected, but never took advantage of it. But what a beautiful sound. Cracking another beer. Kara's getting at it. But if you're going to buy bees, line up where you're getting them from. I don't ever recommend buying packages. I don't know.
If that's on the downtrend, buying packages.
Has to be.
I feel like way more people are buying overwinter local stock.
But I think also we're like involved in a very education forward beekeepers association.
We are.
I mean, the beekeepers association pushes get local overwintered bees. Don't be importing bees from down south. Like it's dumb.
But even beekeepers that I know, like, I guess they're in the Northeast, but like I hear that from other people.
Yeah. I'm never going to recommend somebody get a package. And like, okay. Beekeepers are like, I buy packages and then I requeen with local stock. Well, yeah. All right. That's fine. But in the end, you're probably spending the same amount of money if you just get a nuke. from also, a local beekeeper.
Yeah, why not support the local beekeepers? And then you have somebody to go to talk to. I'm sure you have made this contact with this person.
Yeah, if you're buying a nuke from somebody, they better be willing to answer a couple questions if you have one. You know,
you said like, a couple. You're like, don't keep coming back to me.
Three questions. You're allowed three questions.
I said three, Todd.
So it's a random name, Todd. Yeah. That's funny. There was somebody I didn't agree to mentor, but somebody named Todd that would always reach out and ask questions. We're not talking about you. But yeah, line it up. So we just started taking pre-orders now, and we're going to sell out of those bees soon, you know, and I'm only going to commit to a certain amount. There might be a little extra, but I'm not, you know, I'm not the type that's going
to, yeah, we're over, trying to expand.
I'm an under commit. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Oh, you know, we had some questions. We put out a thing a month ago.
Yes, I love this.
I got to go over my phone to find it. But, Kara, you just released.
Oh, I'll talk about. Okay, so like I said, we had a.
This episode is brought to you
by Kara Jo Skincare and Bee Farm. Yeah, so we have this skincare company, right? That's how we got into beekeeping, because the power of honey on skin. And I just created a repairing body butter that is infused with chamomile and calendula. I am a novice herbalist, and
soon to be like a certified legit herbalist. Well on your way.
Yeah. And it's so deeply hydrating. I only release it in the winter months. So like come March, it won't be available anymore. But it's like cocoa butter, shea butter, coconut oil, jojoba oil, and then the herbs just help with damaged and sensitive skin repairing. So I like ran out of it. It's been selling out.
And also, you know, it's good because Kara's like, I need it for myself. Yeah, I need more. It's so good. Like
I was waiting for the infusion. I'm like, I just want it back.
And you made that infusion like extra great from your teaching, learning.
Yeah. I'm just getting better at making, you know, I've been making medicine, but also just skincare and like, you know, how awesome the plants are.
Yeah. So go over to, you know, Kara Jo skincare.com.
K-A-R-A.
Kara with a K, Joe, J-O. Kara's awesome middle name, Kara Jo Skincare. And we ship all over the country. Literally, we've shipped to almost every state. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You'll really like it. You'll find something. We have like propolis skincare. We have beeswax and stuff. So.
Oh, Restore and Protect rules too.
Yeah. So check that out. All right. What are the questions?
So we had some questions come in and it was actually, there was one really great question that I'm going to save till the end, because one of the things that I want to get into this episode is I want to revisit bee venom therapy, something that I'm very passionate about and we got into years ago.
For multiple reasons.
Yeah, and I'm going to get back into it again for multiple reasons.
Yeah, you need to.
Yeah, so, all right, that was a great question, but I'm going to save that for the end. Here's a good one. Jackie asked, have you ever been stung on the head? I just got stung. I want to say this might be an Aussie. Shout out our Australian fans that I really, really
love
like
shouting them out. Dude, every episode.
Every
it's time great.
Every time we interact with them, they're just, they're fun. And then I go on like weeks where I speak Australian. I have an Australian accent
You're
at home.
You're really good at it.
And I'm not going to do it right now. But I think one day when I bartend, I'm just going to put an Australian accent the whole night bartending and see if anybody calls me on it.
Oh, they're totally going to call you on it.
Crikey. So anyway, Jackie, yes, have you been stung on the head? I got a bee stuck in my hair for the first time. Do you remember Kelly Thomas?
No.
So the first year we had bees, it was springtime. We would like peek in on the hives all the time. We were dumb. We saw all these people on the internet that would just beekeep without any equipment all the time. So we're like, oh, let's just peek in. And we would, you know, lift the lid and check on the bees without putting any veil on or anything. So Kelly comes over and it's like getting a little later. And you know, again, we were super beginners. So we didn't even...
We're like, come on over, a friend that's terrified of bees. It's fine. You'll be fine.
So she's like, okay. So we lift the lid. And we're like, look at that. And then I'm like, oh, you know what? Here, I'll take a frame out. I pull a frame.
Oh,
and
I remember.
Out. And all of a sudden, a bee just flies right into her hair. And she did not get stung, but I give her credit. She like held her composure and let us go, like, you're good, you're good. And, like, you know.
Well, it's good when you have somebody else with you when the bees get stuck in your hair. Like, I've never been beekeeping without a veil and it's gotten stuck in my hair, but, like, I'll be walking around the yard and it gets stuck, or it gets, like, somehow goes into my
yeah, all like, of a sudden veil. You're like, there's a bee walking on my face.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I have, like, really curly hair and, like, put really curly hair into a...
Might as well be Velcro.
...veil. And it just, like, gets... And it's hot and it just, like, gets all messed up. But you eventually... And they're just so loud when... Because they're struggling because they're freaking out. But I've never actually got stung... I think I've gotten stung in the ear because of it, but I've never got stung in the head. But... Good.
I got popped in the face early on.
You did.
I think it was another situation where we were showing off.
Our friends were there.
Patty and Brian were over, and I was like, yeah, and the bee flew right and just popped me right on the bridge of my nose under my eye.
And you swelled up a lot.
And so when we first started beekeeping, I would swell. If I got popped in the hand, boom, Nutty Professor Fat Hand would show up. And I would literally, like, be like, oh man, I can't even hold the frame in that hand anymore. And it was, the pain never changes. The pain of a sting is always the same. It always hurts. Yeah.
Throw your hive tool.
I try to be a little more meditative about it. You know, the space between stimulus and response, where I, you know, if I get stung, I don't just go, right away. I try to take that, like, split second to be like, oh, it's not that bad.
Well, that's like going with Jeff Eckel, the state inspector. Like, he gets stung and he just like, like, you don't even know. He's just like,
So in the beginning, if I got popped, man, I would, it was all localized. So I wasn't worried that I had, you know, an allergy situation. I mean, any reaction to a bee sting is an allergic reaction. So, you know, redness, swelling, warmth on site, all allergic reactions. But if it's localized, you don't really.
Well, I don't know if it's an allergic reaction. It's a normal reaction to the venom, but there's a difference between an allergic reaction and just a normal reaction.
Well, I think there's a different. I think they're all allergic reactions.
Okay.
I mean, a mosquito bite is an allergic reaction.
True.
So I think no matter what, it's an allergic reaction. But then if it travels.
It's like a histamine response no matter what.
So if it travels and if all of a sudden you've got hives showing up on a different part of your body.
Itchiness in a different part of your body.
Yeah. Then you know there's something different. So I was never worried about it. But boom, I get popped right in the bridge of my face. And just, if you remember the movie Mask. Not The Mask with Jim Carrey, but Mask. Rocky Dennis story. Cher is the mother. True story, but this dude with like elephantitis, the face, I looked like that.
And then you also did your Rocky impression. If you want to do that now.
When you look in the mirror and you see impressions. A swollen, you know what I mean, you know? So for the rest of the night, I just talk like Rocky. Rocky Balboa. So yes, I have been stung on the face, but since then, every year, my reaction has gotten less and less and less. So I got stung last year in the face. Didn't faze me one bit. Like, scraped the stinger out. It was under my eye. Scraped the stinger out. Didn't have any swelling at all. Like, no big deal. Whatever. I mean, it hurt, but...
One of our friends that's a beekeeper, Judy, she had a bee crawl in her ear and sting her inside her ear canal. Oh. Yeah.
It's so loud.
Ah. Oh. That seems like I would freak out if a bee was in my ear. Like, what are you going to do? I don't even know.
Yeah. So
no.
Jackie, good luck. It's a rite of passage to get popped in the head.
Yeah. And also on that point, like, well, okay. So if this is what I do, if I get stung, if a bee gets stuck in my hair, and you I go, have a veil.
Greg, get over here.
Sometimes you can kind of like let your hair out and wiggle it out and you can get it free, but other times you just kind of have to smash the bee, which sucks. But like,
well, that's most also, of the time they've already spit a stinger out, whether it's in you or it's like in your hair.
Yeah. But that's also like these women who are beekeeping without veils and their hair is down.
And talking into a video.
Well, just like really lightly
because I'm a fake beekeeper.
I save the bees.
I just happened to find bees in the back of my truck after my husband set this all up for me.
But I just don't, and I see more and more women doing it. And I have a question for the people out there that are beekeeping without veils. Why? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, what else do you do? Do you drive around without a seatbelt?
But like, what is the purpose of
it
that?
It gets me internet views.
Yeah, exactly. And other than that,
gives people a false sense of security and sends a bad message.
Exactly. But like, I just think it's like, it's totally ridiculous. But anyway,
and the number of people that have gone, I want to be a beekeeper because I saw this stupid woman on the internet and I think beekeeping is so easy.
I think we have an episode on this too.
Yeah. I think it's called like
Queen Bee Drama. It's an old one. But yeah, they're like, even if they're not trying to sting you, they just get caught. Like,
if you see a beekeeper with their hair down, just turn that off. Block that Instagram account. They're stupid.
Yeah.
They're fake and they're dumb.
And don't like feed into that need to do that.
And if they have clean beekeeping equipment, they're fake.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Oh, look at your white, perfect lily white suit. Yes. You're not a beekeeper.
Yep. Or your gloves. Phony. Clean gloves. Whenever you watch beekeeping movies and there's a beekeeper, they always have like super clean, like brand new.
I also, there's like Instagram farmers now too, just, you know, and they'll post these videos of them like working in a farm. And I'm like, your boots have no mud.
Are you kidding me?
You have your nails done?
Yes, like farmers with manicures and their nails are pristine. I'm like, you're not farming. Like, you're not a farmer.
Oh, there's so much phoniness.
It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
Phony. Kind of like, what's the catcher in the rye? God, phonies.
Okay, Holden.
Holden. Caulfield.
I teach that book. Yeah. I teach that book, 10th grade language arts.
Another question we had, does flavor of honey change? Is it because of the nectar or is it because of the pollen coming in? Yeah, big time. We harvest our honey seasonally, early in our area. And again, I say this every single episode, when you're being given information about beekeeping, it's very important to know where that information is coming from. Geography wise, we're in southeastern Pennsylvania. We are able to harvest spring, summer, and fall.
Hopefully.
A lot of times in the fall, we don't even harvest that. We let the bees have all of it for winter. But springtime, super bright, super clear,
light,
really
floral,
almost like minty notes coming through. I love it.
Yeah.
Summertime, a little bit darker, a little more like, I always say, like, what honey tastes like. It's like the most honey of honey flavors is the summer honey around us.
The honey also in summer for us sometimes tastes like grape. There's like grape notes to it.
Is that summer or is that the spring?
I think it's this.
We're gonna have to do a taste test.
We should.
It's a good thing to do in an episode.
And then fall's gonna be darker and it's gonna be like kind of more malt, like malty, maybe like a little.
Yeah,
bit.
That's a good way of putting it. It's a little earthier.
Yeah,
it's a little brown sugary sweetness that comes through. There's a honey company near us that imports honey from Washington State, and it's this really dark fall honey from Washington State, a color of honey that you can't get in Pennsylvania. And magically, there's multiple beekeepers that sell
the same color,
the same exact color honey. So I asked them, I said, hey, does so-and-so buy honey here? And they said, yeah, she buys honey from us. And I went, do you know that she says it's her own treatment-free local honey? And they just looked at me and went, yeah, there's nothing we can really do about it. And I'm like, do I tell the grocery store about this? Like, I'm not. I don't want to be that person.
And also the thing is, God damn,
does that piss me off.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's so annoying. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Just be like, and because this happened, we were looking at like bottles and stuff and we're like, okay, certain people are selling other people's honey and they're not claiming.
Right. If they're not saying, they might not say it's from somewhere else, but they're not saying it's from them.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I get it. I'm cool with that. I'm more cool with that. But yeah, some of the people I'm talking about literally like project. They're clearly projecting. They're overly like, this is my honey.
There's a lot of beekeepers doing that.
Yeah. So dumb. Annoying. And I mean, everybody, it's become such a thing now. A lot of times when people find out I'm a beekeeper, they immediately go, do you know honey and olive oil are the top two fake products coming out? And I'm like, I'm glad people are starting to know.
Yeah.
That is a thing. So yeah, the flavor of honey absolutely changes. We see it change seasonally. It's changing because the nectar sources are different. I don't have factual proof of this, but I think that there is factual proof that the darker the honey, the more nutritious it is. It contains more enzymes, contains more nutrients. And I think that is because the roots of these plants that come up in the springtime, have very shallow roots because they don't have a lot of time to, you know, to get these roots to dig down real deep. So the amount of minerals they're able to get out of the soil is a lot less because their roots aren't as deep. So deeper the roots, more layers of minerals, more minerals is brought up to the surface, aka more minerals and enzymes are getting put into the nectar. So, you know, summertime, those plants have had a little bit more time than the spring plants. They're bringing up more nutrients. It's a more flavorful honey. Fall, way exactly. Same thing in the fall, like, but those roots are even deeper. So they're bringing up more nutrients. And I think it's reflected in the nectar. There's some plants that are later bloomers that are very dark. You know, buckwheat is the perfect example, like super dark, dank, like weird flavored honey. And that's its kind of its own category. But for the most part, like, yeah, later in the season, darker and going to be different. I can't say the pollen is the reason, though. Pollen is, you're going to find traces of pollen in, you know, unfiltered honey for sure, but the pollen content that gets in that honey isn't doing much to change the flavor. If you have a pollen trap, though, and you collect that pollen, it's always really cool to see the different colors of pollen coming in, and they do taste different.
Yeah, the pollen does change.
And that's cool. I would like to do that again.
We used to collect pollen just like minimally, but
it was a few days a month we would do it. And one hive, and for a few days we'd like turn the pollen trap to be like
on,
quote unquote. And then just for a couple days, maybe like 3-4, and then we would turn it off. But
we collected in jars, and we had like May pollen, June pollen, July pollen.
So then the following year, when, you know, May was approaching, we go, okay, make sure we're
eating the May pollen.
Eating May pollen. It's like microdosing. It's like microdosing the
allergen.
Yeah. The pollen.
The pollen, which is the allergen. Yeah.
And I will give a shout out to our friends over at Swarm Bustin' Honey, Southern Chester County, Pennsylvania. They do a lot of pollen collecting. They were the kind of the first people to really introduce me to pollen.
And they taught us about pollen while we came in. And they ship everywhere. They
ship
great.
Everywhere.
We
They're really
them.
Great. We really, really like them. What else do we have? How do you keep track of the bee population? So I didn't fully know what that question meant, but I will say, you know, we tell everybody you can't have one hive. You have to have multiple hives, and until I'm blue in the face, pattern recognition. So when you have more than one hive, you can notice, oh, wow, this population is way less than this one, you know, and then you can even kind of like steal a fruit frame of brood and put it in there and try to even them out a little bit, or if you go like, okay, what is wrong with this hive? Why is it less? So I can't say we keep track of bee population in a specific way, but we're constantly comparing and going, okay, this one is bigger, and then take notes.
Well, I think also when you open up a hive, right, and you, like, are the bees filling all of the frames? Like, are they only filling, like, a couple frames? Do you open it up and they're, the whole box is full? Or, like, is 80% of the box filled out? Then you
make sure you add a box.
You add a box.
It's a rule. So 75-80%. Make sure you add a new box.
Yeah, so that's kind of, like, I don't know, a little bit of like population
tracking. But yeah, I mean,
and then take notes. Notes has got to be the thing,
because if you know you take the notes and you see a hive and you go, man, this population's less, and then you go back and you go, oh, that hive requeened itself 3-4 weeks ago, then you know, okay, you're seeing eggs, you're about to see a huge boom happen. You're going to see a huge amount of growth because for the last 3-4 weeks, there hasn't been new bees. So you're only having bees die. And in the summertime, bees are only living like 45 days. So if you go 3-4 weeks without fresh eggs, that's a huge amount of bees dying without bees replacing them. So just seeing your notes and going, okay, this makes sense.
And looking at the amount of brood in the frames that you have.
Yeah, big time.
It's like population tracking.
I like this question because somebody clearly follows our Carajo Bee Farm. Do chickens and goats, are they emotionally intelligent? Chickens?
Well, emotionally intelligent is different than having emotions.
Those are the words. Emotionally intelligent.
Emotionally intelligent. I don't know if I'm emotionally intelligent. But yeah, let's start with chickens.
Sure. I mean, Kara's the chicken whisperer.
Yeah, but I think chickens are, do they have emotions? Like, let's talk about that. Do chickens have emotions? Yes.
Absolutely, because their personalities are different. Each one of them, their personality is different.
And they basically, their prime emotion is being terrified of everything that happens.
I mean, when you are low on the totem pole of the predator chain,
yeah,
you got to be, the ones that survive are the ones that are more skittish.
Yeah, but we have some...
The nicest chickens are always the ones that get killed.
I know, they really are. I
remember the beginning, I'm like, why do all my favorite chickens die? It's like, oh yeah, right, because they're like docile.
Yeah.
And they're also docile towards foxes.
But there's definitely chickens, like, we have a chicken that has like a beard. She doesn't have like a wattle on her chin, she has a beard.
Amy Winehouse?
And they have... She has like muffs, that's which are like their cheek.
That's the chicken's name. Yeah, I don't think Amy Winehouse had a beard. I mean, she probably had a good mustache though.
And so I just can't resist a good chicken beard. And when she molts and then it comes in the winter, it's just like all fluffy and she's so cute. And she's used a fluff ball.
She turns, yeah.
She used to love being snuggled.
She would ask.
Yeah.
She'd be like, hey, we gonna snuggle?
Greg's like, she's asking for you,
she's
to
like
pick her up
right
now.
Pawing at you.
But you also have to like be consistent with that, because as soon as you like kind of stop snuggling with them, they're like, get away from me, I'm terrified.
Here's a little thing. If you've baby chicks, if you have young chickens and you pick them up and they're struggling, you can't set them down while they're struggling. You have to hold on to them until they're calm. If they struggle and you drop them, you put them down, it's forever ingrained that they freak out and they're going to get loose from you.
Well, and I think also it shows the other chicks.
Yep, and the other chickens will see it. Chickens are they imitate so much.
Oh, even if you watch them, one starts like cleaning themselves, they all start cleaning themselves. Like yeah. They just are copycats. But yeah, I mean, they're not, and some people like totally snug their chickens, and that's because they just
don't
do it all the time.
Clothes on your chickens. It's not good for them.
Oh,
don't
no,
put sweaters on your chickens.
Fluff up.
It's not good for them.
Because they create this barrier of air underneath their feathers, and
yes,
then they can't do that.
Yes, it's funny and cute, whatever, but stop it.
Yeah, don't do that.
As a whole, people, what's that called? Anthropomorphizing?
Yeah, making animals like humans.
Yeah, stop putting...
Humanizing
animals. So, I mean, talking about, are goats emotionally intelligent?
Well,
it's like,
so,
for goats, for animals, I would say yes, but like, not on the level of a child even. Like,
what? Oh.
They're emotional intelligence.
Oh, right. Well, also, I think like just thinking about this, like our goats are super domesticated because we rescued them from like a sanctuary. They weren't just like we didn't buy them from just like a farmer that just like was out. So I think there's just, the more you domesticate your animals, like that's just maybe common sense. Like the more you domesticate your animals,
used
the
to,
more loving
especially as
they will be.
The younger they are when they get that type of treatment, it's going to reflect when they're adults.
Yeah. But our goats are so loving.
Cuddle bugs.
They are so, but sometimes they're also like, I don't want you to touch me. Yeah. I don't like,
I'm like, cool.
Totally
thanks
fine.
For communicating.
Yeah.
I appreciate
like,
it.
Please
and
stay
I respond,
away from me today.
I'll respond to it on purpose. Like, hey, you're communicating, so I'm going to do what you're clearly asking me to do.
If only humans communicated as effectively as these goats do.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that answered that question, but like,
yes,
they have emotion. They have their own personalities. They're very loving.
So loving.
You know, maybe they're loving because it feels good and they get more treats and they get more snugs and they're a social animal. So, I mean... They want to be around anything. Like, literally, we have a goat that just follows chickens around. Like, it wants to hang out with the chickens.
She does.
Naomi might think she's a chicken. but they're such social creatures that, you know, it's one of those things. Like, I'm like, even with dogs, I'm always like, do dogs like being pet? Or do I just really like petting a dog? Like,
yeah.
Should I just have a stuffed animal?
No.
Our old Boston animal. Terrier, Duncan. Shout out Duncan. He was like...
He lived till he was 17.
He was a stuffed animal. Like he, that's just, he, but he loved it. He just wanted to lay and just be rubbed and pet and but be under the covers.
He was a taker. He's like,
he's all selfish.
Yes. It was completely selfish.
And then I really liked this question. I'm actually, hold on. I'm going to read the full question rather than just the little tiny note. All right. So shutter blind. I've heard other beekeepers say you should get stung once a month minimum to keep up venom tolerance so you don't become allergic. My question is, what about the winter months? Should we worry going into spring about our immunity to venom?
Worry? No.
Killer question.
But yeah, so we have a whole episode about this, but I developed an allergy to beekeeping.
Yeah,
so, not to beekeeping, allergy to beekeeping, well, maybe.
I do like that people are always like, do you ever get stung? Or people are like, do you get stung? And I just go, today, did I get stung? Like, yeah, I get stung.
All the time.
You get stung. That's just what happens.
Yeah, I was breaking out in hives in every possible place you could imagine. Wow. It was awful.
So I mentioned before, Kara didn't, when we first started beekeeping, didn't really have a reaction to stings. Like I did big time. She didn't. And then we started doing bee venom therapy. Once we started doing BVT, Kara developed an allergy.
Yeah, because so it was like all at once. And I was getting stung and yeah. I'm like, my feet itch. And Greg's like, that's not a good sign because it's not localized.
Yep.
And then it would be like 15 minutes after I got stung and I would be in hell covered in hives.
Her crotch all itching. It was
so
bad.
I was
like, what are you doing over there? And you're like, it's itching in weird places.
It was so... Ugh. But I went to an allergist and... She hooked it up and she said even because I wasn't having like anaphylaxis. And so she kind of put me on this journey of like microdosing bee stings pretty quickly. We advanced pretty quickly and I within like 2 months.
3 or 4 maybe?
Was it that?
I think so. It was originally 6 months was the plan, but you were able to go quicker.
Yeah. And
but
then,
essentially like the first time she got... a dose, a micro dose, it was like 0.01 parts. If you think of one full bee sting being one part venom, she literally got like 1/100 of that to start, maybe even less. And then the next time, like 0.02. And then maybe 0.06.
And she just like jumped up. She was like, we're fine here. Yeah. But so you're supposed to stay at the allergist and do maintenance. Yep. And I said to her, well, I'm a beekeeper. I'm just going to get stung. And she was like, well, I can't tell you that that's okay, but 2 stings a month.
Yeah.
She was like, but I don't say. So yeah, I just naturally get stung more than that, which is fine. But in the winter months, which this question came up and I was like, oh, I haven't really been stung in a while.
And you said, you were like, I need to get stung.
Yeah.
I need to get stung.
And the thing is like, if you just wait until a relatively warm day, I mean, I guess it depends on where you live. They'll be out. Even if they're just like cleaning out their dead or taking poops or whatever.
Or even like wait until a little later in the afternoon and you'll see a couple straggler bees.
Straggler bees are always nice because they're going to die anyway. And then you can, but it's funny because when you sting yourself, you can tell.
It's not as juiced up.
Yeah, if they're dying, they just don't have as much, like force in them. So, yeah, and we always do it in like my left hip bothers me, so I would always just do it in my left hip and like a little bit of bee venom therapy, just getting that cortisol in there and
two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
So the question, should you be worried? I'm going to say no. If you haven't had issues, you've reacted relatively normally to bee stings before coming into spring. If you haven't been stung all winter, I don't think you should be worried about it. Just know at any given time, any of us can become allergic.
Yes.
And then that's something that happens. But also remember this, spring beekeeping is easy.
Docile bees.
Bees are very happy. They're coming out of winter. All of a sudden, there's nectar everywhere. It's springtime. Everything's growing. Everything's blooming. They're growing. They're able to grow faster than like mite populations and pests that they're dealing with. So, generally speaking, in the spring, your bees should be very docile, very happy. If they're not, there's something wrong.
It's not. Don't just think that the queen's.
So say we all were coming out of winter and all of a sudden it's like fall beekeeping and we're extracting honey and stealing honey from them where they're not in as good of a place. They're a little more angry or dead of summer where it's so hot and it's a dearth and it's dry and they don't have access to nectar and they're just pissed off. That could be an issue because all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, I could be stung half a dozen times pretty easily. Maybe then it'd be like, oh, man, it's like 0 to 60, you know, but
or
in the springtime,
put a pair of gloves on.
it's a slow roll. So like, I don't think you should be that worried if you have common sense and you're not doing Instagram beekeeping and having your hair down with no mask on.
And I think also like when you do fine. Get stung, a nice way to look at it is like, oh, there's my little microdose. And like, yeah. Like with my allergy, I don't wear gloves, but once I get stung like 2-3 times, I put gloves on just because I'm like, all right, I'm not going to be dumb about this. I got to put the gloves on.
But also like if you get stung 2 or 3 times, like there's something going on. The bees are a little pissy. Like maybe it makes sense to put some gloves on because, you know, it will allow you to be a better beekeeper because you're not worrying so much.
Yes. You don't want to worry while you're in there because then you make herky jerky decisions and movements and you're acting out of this fear rather than like just kind of flowing with it.
Yeah. So I just wanted to revisit bee venom therapy a little bit. And so I go back. It's like literally episode like 2 or 3. And we do a deep dive. I played sports my whole life, played lacrosse in college. I broke my femur, tore my ACL, MCL, and patella tendon all in one shot on the lacrosse field at one point. So I like one leg is so jacked up. And literally for like 20 years, I've just kind of always been in pain
and like lumbering around.
Yeah. And it's just I didn't even think about that I was in pain. But I do all this research and I go, you know what, I'm gonna try bee venom therapy. So I start stinging my knee that was jacked up, and I don't know how long it was. I'm gonna say it was about a month, maybe even less. And I'm walking around outside and I say to Kara, these shoes are really comfortable. It's weird. My shoes are just really comfortable. Like, I don't know. They're not new shoes, but like, my shoes are comfy. Then I go, wait a second. It's not that the shoes are comfortable. I'm for the first time in legitimately maybe 20 years not feeling a pain that I didn't even realize I was feeling because it was just my everyday.
Oh, it's such a great feeling.
And I'm like, what? So I went, okay, this is clearly working. And I kept it up. And then I kind of tailed away because I went, all right, I think I'm good for a little bit. And then I tore ligaments in my ankle because I thought I could be like a, you know, play basketball against high school kids again. tore my ankle up and I did bee venom therapy on my ankle. And I saw like what I would say was really rapid improvements.
Your ankle still hurt?
I mean, my ankle's never not hurt. They're still very stiff, but like whatever. Again, I should do it. Like one of the things bee venom does is it cleans up scar tissue. And that's why I originally was doing it in my knee.
Got to do it in your shoulder now.
Yeah. And I dislocate my shoulder a bunch of times and my shoulder's been acting up doing all this land clearing. So it would make sense to get some stings in there. But also I had Lyme disease. I had Lyme disease over the summer. And I did a whole herb protocol and, you know, just, it was quite the...
He had bullseye rashes all over,
like 17 bullseye rashes.
So grateful for that because that's how we figured out what was wrong with him. And it was pretty quickly we figured it out.
I think the biggest thing with bee venom and bee venom therapy is that it will kill the bacteria that causes Lyme disease along with some other bacteria. And it has the ability to, that bacteria has the ability to hide in your brain. It literally can cross the blood brain barrier and hide in your central nervous system, and go lie dormant there. But bee venom can also cross the blood brain barrier. Literally most medicines can't do that. In order to have a medicine cross the blood-brain barrier, you usually have to take some other medicine like arsenic that like shuts down the blood-brain barrier from working so then the medicine can get up, which is so bad for you.
So, yeah, my brother had like
paralysis or African...
Sleeping disease?
Sleeping disease. There's two different varieties. Died. Like, it's bad.
And he was literally in Africa taking arsenic.
He was taking arsenic.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Like, maybe not like arsenic, but like it had arsenic in it.
Yeah.
And it was furthering his brain, traumatic brain injury.
Yeah. And he like all of a sudden was like a third grader.
Yeah. And I was like, man, if they, but he keeps bees, but they're stingless bees. I was like, well, that's not going to help anything. But yeah, no, that's like a real thing, that arsenic thing.
But yeah, the bee venom. So that's why if you do look up Lyme protocols and, you know, dealing with especially chronic Lyme, you know, long-term Lyme disease, you get stung along your spine because your spine is the, you know, central nervous system superhighway. And if you're getting stung in the hive, spine, it's like the direct shot into your brain.
And they don't know if you can ever fully wipe out the bacteria of Lyme. Like you were saying, it's dormant.
Yeah.
Like it can lay dormant. So like,
and so my thinking right now is like, I've been in so much pain and yes, I'm doing like intensely physical labor again, but also like the same areas that I had really bad pain during when I knew I had Lyme, you know, the certain joints in my hand, I have pain there. Granted, it's probably because there's trauma to those parts. So that's the part that is going to have inflammation.
There
and such.
Is residual Lyme inflammation. That's like a thing. That's totally a
Remember when I had Lyme, my hand swelled up.
Yeah, it was so weird. So we had no crazy. Idea what was happening.
I was like, I guess I broke my hand. Like,
I had, I made an orthopedic appointment for you.
The wrist surgeon. So
yeah, but the thing, like, you need to be careful because we were like, oh, apitherapy is great, and then I developed an allergy. So you need, you can't just be willy nilly. Yeah,
especially.
You really do. I was like, sting me 8 times along the spine.
Yeah, but go back.
You're an idiot.
Go back, listen to episode 2 or 3. We really did a nice deep dive. I listened to that episode maybe a year ago, and I was like, man, this was good info.
You're like, oh, we're so good at this podcasting.
I don't know if I'll ever say that. Cara Jo. You want to do a little Cara Jo herb corner?
Oh, I do want to do a Cara Jo herb corner.
Cool. So a few episodes ago, we started, you know, Cara's doing this herbalism class, and obviously we're growing herbs, and we have an herb farm, and we're using those herbs in Cara Jo skincare, and we take a lot of herbs. You know, we try not to take, like, you know, these over-the-counter.
We do preventative things, and I don't know. It's
nature
really
has an answer.
It's really, I mean, we're talking about like bee venom therapy, and then I think it's really interesting because I've just been interested in herbs, forever. I remember.
I've liked herb for a long time too. High school, I remember finding herb, and I don't think I ever turned back.
I just was like amazed at the fact that like out in your lawn there could be like dandelions and violets growing, and that was like medicine. And so I, you know, was making skincare out of it, and like honey, we know honey is like really powerful. But I'm always amazed that I tell people, you know, I'm studying herbalism, I'm an herbalist, and they're like, oh. And I'm like, especially maybe beekeepers, I'm hoping that beekeepers understand the power of plants, like if we're even just thinking about it in that realm. But it's hard this season during the winter. We don't really have any plants growing, but we do have evergreen trees, and pine trees are actually highly medicinal. And the white eastern white pine was like the original pine tree, like the most prominent tree that was growing in, I think, across the United States. And then loggers came in and wiped them all out.
Dude, isn't it nuts to think in the U.S., definitely in the eastern part of the U.S., but I think in the whole country, 100 years ago, every tree got wiped out, basically. Like, logging literally wiped out everything. So there are no trees. The oldest trees in Pennsylvania are on islands in the middle of the Allegheny River because the loggers couldn't access them. But like all the trees on our property, they're all under 100 years old. And like all the trees. I mean, when you find a 300-year oak, it's like, this monumental thing. But that should be the case.
I know.
And I mean, we went to Iceland. Literally,
No trees.
All the trees got wiped out, yeah. And they're trying to regrow forests, and they can't.
I know. We're so fortunate that we can.
Yeah, but it's so crazy to think, like, all the trees got cut down, and they regrew, but what?
Yeah. So the eastern white pine is the tallest tree in eastern North America, and it grows up, like, between, like, 160 and 180 feet. And everything I'm going to tell you right now is, like, basically all pines have like medicinal activity, and there's like a fair amount of overlap. So just as long as you're like identifying the tree properly, know that I'm speaking specifically about white pine, but there is overlap.
And while she's talking, think about this. Pine, what its medicinal value is so good in the wintertime. And pine is something that doesn't shed. It's, you know, not deciduous or whatever that term is,
yeah.
But it keeps its needles. And those are what you need in the winter. Like, nature knows. It makes sense.
Yeah. So you want to, I mean, the inner bark is medicinal, but I'm just going to talk about the pine needles, because pine needles, everybody can access. And inner bark, you need to be really careful collecting it, because you could kill the tree and highly damage the tree. So we're just talking pine needles here. Ideally, you want to forage them in the spring or autumn, but you can totally do it during the winter. But if you want to like have some forethought and collect it, then you can dry them. But I've done it in the winter many times.
Don't recommend taking a Christmas tree and doing it. Oh,
this is such a good point. Do you want to pour me some of that beer?
Sure.
Just like a little bit. Yeah. So we just learned this because we have goats, which I guess, duh. A lot of Christmas tree farms are treating with pesticides. And
I appreciate it. So many friends have been like, hey, do you want my Christmas tree for your goats? And I'm like, and shout out our buddy Chad was like, hey, just so you know, I did some research on it. Every tree sprayed with like the same bullshit pesticides. And you look it up and the USDA is like, not harmful towards, I'm not playing that game.
And also, okay, I'm so glad you brought this up, because again, seeing people online, they're like, take your Christmas tree and make this herbal tea. And I'm like, if you are trying to make medicine, you don't want pesticides in your medicine. You don't want to like infuse your tea with pesticides. So that's such a good point.
And it's not even like a spray it off scenario.
You mean wash it off?
Yeah, it's not like that. I mean, this stuff's being absorbed into the plant. And yeah, it's being put out into
this. Part of it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So pine needles. And I'm basically just, you know, easy peasy pine needle tea. It's a good cough remedy and expectorant when you have like a lot of phlegm and mucus in your lungs, and you either it's both ways. It's either coming up freely and you want to kind of get it up, or it's kind of stuck.
We need to send Gary Delabate some pine tea.
Yes, exactly. And you just want to get it up. So whether it's like copious and it's just like coming up and you need to get it out, or, and even in your sinuses, like you just, it's stuck and you kind of like cough, and it's like that unproductive cough. It's also good for when you have head colds and sinus infections as like a nasal cleanse. You can do it. You can do it as a steam.
So what, you just snort some pine?
Snort it up there. No, don't do that. I'm going to tell you how to do this, but you just like make a tea and then you let it cool. So if you're putting it actually like in a neti pot, you're going to probably want to use distilled water. And you can make
Would you still, for a neti pot, would you still do like a, what do you do? You do a little bit of salt and baking soda?
Yeah, I never liked doing that. No. That always burned my nasal passages.
At one point we were doing the wrong.
Yeah, I just like, I'd rather just do this. Like, okay. You can do that thing, yeah, okay. And I'm sure people can do it well, but like, that's just like a little bit, maybe it's just my sinuses. Like, it's just a little bit harsh for me. But even if you just want to take some pine needles and you can decoct them, which like, it just means like put them in, water and kind of just like low simmer them for like 20 minutes and then take that water, cool it, and then put it in a neti pot.
Strain it.
Yes. Good point. Strain it, with like fine mesh, Or you could take some pine needles, and they do have monoterpenes, which is essential oils. So you could take some boiling water, put the pine needles in a bowl, and then put some boiling water over it and just like make a tent, like a...
Oh, like steam it.
Yeah.
Steam, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's like a really gentle way of doing it. I don't know if I've talked to you guys about sage before, but you can add sage to this at any point, like do the pine needles and sage, and that's really good for all of the same things. It's antibacterial, it's antiviral, and it's high in vitamin C. The needles of the pine tree have 4 to 5 times the vitamin C of lemons.
Wow.
Yeah. And when you're picking the needles, they come, they're like in little bunches, and the closer to the trunk that you can get, the, they've done some research and they found that like the higher the vitamin C content is. Yeah. So, okay. So you want to make a tea, you want to, I just told you how to make a decoction. So what you're going to want to do is you want to take for a tea with the needles, you want to take 1 teaspoon of leaves. When you're making teas, you always...
1 teaspoon, 1 to 2 teaspoons?
1 to 2 teaspoons. Did I say something different?
I heard 1 to 1 teaspoon.
I'm on my second beer, so maybe I said 1 to 2.
1 to 2 teaspoons. Yes. Yeah, got it. As I probably re-listened to this episode and realized I said the wrong word, I don't know, half a dozen times and just...
I do that teaching and the kids are giggling and I'm like, what did I just say?
What does skeet skeet mean? No,
that's a story for another time. So when you're making a tea, right, you always want to use dried, and listen, I've made this with like fresh needles and it's just as delicious, but you want to use dried leaves, dried needles, because there's so much moisture content in that when you're making a tea, you're not really, you're just like kind of adding to the moisture content and you're not getting the full medicinal, the full medicine out of it. So 1 to 2 teaspoons of dried leaves, chop them up really small, and then add 8 ounces of hot water. So that ratio, however much you want to make, and then you steep it for like 30, 40 minutes. So cover it and keep it in there. And then you can drink that throughout the day. One thing that I keep talking about when I talk about herbs is if you want the medicine, you got to keep it in your body. You can't expect to just, you know, take this a little bit and it's going to like clear everything up. So a really good way to do that is if you have a thermos, if you want to do it like in the morning, you could pour the water in the thermos. I don't know, you could even not strain if you're just drinking it, like leaves and pine needles, they have like really good minerals if you're not totally grossed out by that.
A little different with the neti pot.
Yes, totally different than the neti pot. And you could put it in a thermos and you can close it up and you can let it steep and then you can just sip on that throughout the day. It doesn't have to be difficult, but that can be a free, powerful medicine for you that's available all throughout the winter.
Suck it, Mucinex.
Isn't that so
great?
Got a great
new expectorant in town.
I know. And it's like, it tastes good. I don't know if you guys are like, ew, pine needle tea.
No, that sounds great.
It's a little bit tart. I also
know what it tastes like. Yeah, it's good.
Like, it's like tarty, if that's a word, tart.
What I'm hearing is you think I should make a simple syrup with pine needles.
Ooh.
And drink old fashions with it all day long.
Oh, I've been thinking about making like a pine soap.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So, nice.
Yeah. It's good for like eczema. It's topically good for like cracked skin and psoriasis and like bacterial. If you have like impetigo or like bacterial infections on your skin, it's good for that. You can just like do a wash. You can do a compress with it. But just like, guys,
nature is healing. Nature really is so powerful. Let's take advantage of it.
Why not?
And just although let's not take advantage of nature. Let's like work together with nature.
Yeah. Not take it for granted.
Yeah, true that.
But just play around with it too. Like the first time I made pine needle tea, I did it totally quote unquote wrong. And I was like, oh, now I know what this tastes like. And now I can do it different and do it better. So just have fun with it.
That was a good one, Kara. That was a good little herb corner.
I love herbs.
Check out KaraJoeSkincare.com. Check us out on the interwebs.
Yeah, Cara Joe Skincare, at Cara Joe Bee Farm, at Mind Your Hives. Just Mind Your Hives,
right? Yep. And please, like, I love the interaction. We love hearing from you. If you've got questions, comments, hit us up.
Yeah, if you have, like, topics you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yeah. And if you listen this far,
you're a rock star.
We really appreciate it. Hope your off season's going well.
Yeah, just bundle up and hunker down, people. You're going to be out. It's spring. The sun's going to be out. Just take advantage of
this. The days are getting longer already.
Take advantage of just being able to cozy up.
Peace out, kids. Ba-doom, ba-da-da, ba-da-ba.